Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive. We're hoping you're setting a spot out on your dial. We have a bunch of exciting things going on. Our tech service is back, better than ever. I've got somebody beating on me trying to get the morning newspaper back going again. So that might even be happening. But I know one thing, it's definitely happening. We're a week out on a cup of soup or bowl. It begins on Monday at Costas, which is why I'm wearing my Costas shirt. I was going to wear my Coco shirt, but Coco's is shut this week, so don't go over to Coco's this week. They're shut down this week. They're smart. They just go someplace warm. It's not warm here. I will be at State Fair later on in the week. We'll be there on Thursday. We'll be at Cooper's Pub on Friday, and we'll be at Fadley's in Lexington Market on Tuesday. Coco's on Wednesday. All of it's up at Baltimore Positive. Luke is here. We're going to get to baseball. We're going to get to the Super Bowl, the real Super Bowl, or the Mahomes Bowl, the Kelce Bowl, the Taylor Swift Bowl, whatever it's going to be. And I told my New Orleans drunken stupor stories from the 1990s already. But this Ravens offseason and the exhale that you, as a reporter that's embedded out there, me as a reporter who's been on my couch watching them play and writing nasty notes to Mark Andrews. I also had the kids on from Buffalo last week. Those kids were just, I want to talk more about that. Remind me to talk more about that, Luke, at the end of this, the Bills Mafia kids, now that they've been eliminated, because it just broke my heart this morning because I realized, like, I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl and I was going to make a big stink and have them on 2 weeks from now. I'm going to have them on anyway because they're still raising money for Mark Andrews. But the Ravens aftermath, you and I didn't go to Buffalo. We went kayfabe on that last week about like you not being there to clean out the lockers. We never have any idea how whether they're going to win or lose. I have joked all weekend. Right this minute, you and I would have been on a plane leaving Kansas City. We had a 5:50 a.m. flight on Monday morning, leaving Kansas City. So that plane's in the air right now. Like we would have been there had things worked out differently on a football field. So we were prepared for New Orleans, Kansas City. So were the Ravens, and it is. In the aftermath of the chaos of getting eliminated, and I thought about this, and I tweeted about this, and blue skied about this, and on Sunday when the Commanders were losing, to say, I saw my timeline, the Flacco to Polamalu pick, and I'm going to bring that up with Joe because Joseph Vincent Flacco is coming on the show this week. He threw that pick to Polamalu. He just didn't get enough air under the ball. I hadn't seen that play in 15 years, but I've seen it. It showed up on my timelines. I watched it a couple of times, knowing he was coming on the show. And then I think about losing the lead to Pittsburgh a couple of years later. I think about the kick in Cundiff, which I wrote at length about. And Luke, I didn't even realize when I wrote that piece to Mark Andrews that 35,000 people have read this week. Thank you. I appreciate everyone reading my writing. And the highest compliment anybody could pay me is when they write to me and say, you know, F you for writing that about Mark Andrews. And I hated you and I didn't want to read it. And then I read it and you changed my mind. I'm like, oh, I made you think. My job. But you've had a week. You went to the press conference. We didn't even do a segment off of the press conference. Those press conferences, don't get me st I mean, I have a whole total run on all of that's gone on with their media relations and their communications and how they communicate and why they communicate that way and how it's not believable in a lot of ways. And in other ways, I feel for them because it is overwhelming when you lose like that. And but it's been a couple of days. What's on your mind after watching football all weekend, man?
Well, I mean, after watching all weekend, the question comes to mind, is it better that Kansas City just won again and Buffalo is still in the same camp as the Ravens
And the Bengals.
and the Bengals? You know, I mean, I get it. The Bengals got there, but they didn't win one. So, I mean, getting to the Super Bowl is not the goal. Winning the Super Bowl is the goal. And I look at that compared to had Josh Allen and the Bills won on Sunday night and they're going to the Super Bowl. It stinks either way, right? I mean, you can try to rationalize things as much as you want. And I think, as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday last week. I can't remember which day. All of it runs together because, to your point, you're gearing up for Buffalo and you're gearing up for Kansas City. You're gearing up for New Orleans a couple weeks later. And then it just ends so abruptly, right? I mean, it's always so abrupt. We talked about this a little bit with the Orioles playing a best of three and losing twice in what 26 hours or whatever it was to the Royals, and then it's just over. But when you have a team with championship aspirations and you lose in the fashion that they lost, it's so abrupt. But as I wrote, I think the Ravens, I mean, where they stand right now, it's both a blessing and a curse, because I look at their football team and look, we'll get into the offensive line, the annual edge rusher question, what's going to happen in terms of adding another safety and what that means for Kyle Hamilton. Like they have roster, I don't know if concerns as much as just roster points of interest, areas of interest that they need to address, just like any team does, including Kansas City and Philadelphia. But right now, as you and I are sitting here in the final week of January, Nestor, I ask you a simple question. Are the Ravens going to be back in the playoffs next year? And you're going to say, yes, assuming they're healthy, assuming number eight is healthy, yes. They have a chance every year, and that's a blessing. On the flip side, however, and this is where you get into it, and Buffalo's asking the same exact questions right now. What's it going to take to get over the hump? What's it going to take to get past Kansas City? And this year specifically, the Orioles or the Ravens, of course, didn't get past the Bills. So throw that in there if you want. But we know the big picture is getting past the Chiefs. And again, you're asking, what is it going to take? I don't think it's this magic solution in terms of their roster building. I think it's just a matter of maturation, and got to do it. You've got to get through. You've got to play smart football. You can't turn the ball over. You can't have big penalties. You have to do it. And there's a curse element to that, because you ask yourself, what is it going to take? Lamar is going to be a three-time MVP in what, a week and a half. He's going to be at NFL honors, and barring something strange, he's going to be MVP again. And this team had nine Pro Bowl selections originally, and then Kyle Van Noy and Ronnie Stanley are joining them, right? I mean, they've got 11 players that have been recognized, even, original selection or injury replacement. You just go down the list, and everything on paper looks like it should be, hey, this is a Super Bowl team. Hey, this is a championship caliber team. And yet they haven't broken through. So there is a little bit of fighting the urge, resisting the urge of throwing your hands up and saying, what is it going to take? Now, Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh said what you would expect them to say at the State of the Ravens last week. And, there wasn't anything overly interesting to me that to take away from that. I mean, get into some specifics, Ronnie Stanley or some specific players here or there that they talked about. But, there's very much a sense of, wow, you got to go through this entire 12-month process again. And you're going to be good next year. Barring something strange, I'm picking you to win the division. I expect, you're going to be drafting late, but I have the confidence that they'll come away with a good football player. Now, how good and how impactful in year one and year two is always the question with these. But you just look at it and you say, what's it going to take to get past, get over the hump? I mean, and that's what's frustrating. There are 29, 30 other teams in the league right now that would kind of laugh at the Ravens' problems, right? I mean, when you talk about their quarterback, their roster, all that. But it doesn't make you feel any better in the moment when you're walking off the field in Buffalo and you're cleaning out your lockers and you're sitting there watching the Chiefs and the Bills in the title game. And in a couple of weeks, you're going to be watching the Chiefs in the Super Bowl again. So it's a blessing and a curse, because you're right there every year. That's the blessing part of this. And you're going to continue to be with a 28-year-old quarterback who had the best season of his career this past year. But what's it going to take to get over the hump? And, that answer feels simplistic, but it's not simplistic because you haven't done it. So I don't know. It's a long off season. It's a long spring. It's a long training camp. It's a long preseason. It's a long regular season to get back to, say, the divisional round. And then it's like, all right, what are you going to do this time around? And there is a heck of a grind to that, both physically and mentally.
I would say for me, I don't want to be hard on them in the way that perhaps I was too hard on Mark Andrews, and I wasn't hard at all, by the way. I mean, accountability is hard. We all have it. I have it
Sure.
with the FCC and with you as an employee and people that sponsors. I mean, we're all responsible to somebody, and we're all accountable, especially for a guy with a microphone that's been front facing to the community as a public figure for 33 years. There's a time and place to step aside and say, I'm going to put my legal team out in front of it. I've had to do that. There's times and places where you have to shut up and just, in matters of employment, I get all of that. But then there's the level of expectation. And I went through this with Leonard Raskin, and that was really good. Leonard and I always go a little bit meander into different places with our conversations than you and I on the field, off the field, to the stands, to what levels of expectations are in business, in just being, and what a 20-year-old expects from an athlete versus a 50-year-old would expect from an athlete in regard to accountability. But man, Harbaugh's the king of this because he's out there and he's quoting scripture and he's rah-rahing and he's, we're the best, we're the most accountable, everybody's great, my guys are like all of this. I go back to all of this, what, and then there's the fans and the Barstool idiots with death threats and just stupid stuff. Between the lines for what is fair and what is accountable and what these men making 15, 20, $50 million a year. And I've watched all of this over 30 years in the locker room back when they weren't making that kind of money, and watching the society move toward football in a way where every time I have a Lee Steinberg, he's on, 94 of the 100 most watched television shows. It is MASH, it is 60 Minutes, it's the thing that society cares the most about. Black, white, red, blue, Democrat, Republican. I mean, it's gambling is now a, like all of this. And we talk about that, whether the ball, should be chipped or not on gambling parts. But the Ravens' responsibilities in all of this and where it began 30 years ago and where there would be a press conference this week where the owner would come out sullen-faced and say, look, I'm trying. I like that. I like when the owner's trying. I like when the owner says, we did this in the Black Wing because of that. We took $600 million of your taxpayer dollars that are going to wind up in my pocket when I pocket this and sell it for $8 billion a couple of years from now. It's like, and having real reporters challenge and say, where's the accountability? Steve, were you a little upset that Mark didn't speak to the media after the game? Were you a little bit upset with the penalties this year? How do you feel about Justin Tucker? Having the answer once a year as the person who owns it and is making hundreds of millions of dollars off of this every year, hundreds of millions of dollars off of this every year, and just took $600 million to fix the stadium up so that you could sit in the corner of the press box. I could be thrown out with Kevin Byrne's name on it and be thrown out of the Super Bowl next week as an entity who has tried to support their organization. The tickets were under $100 for their playoff games. They lead with this arrogance in a general sense that their owner does not speak. By the way, Josh Harris showed up all over my timeline on Sunday morning, strangely enough, and like just on my timeline, doing like Channel 7 and Channel 4 rah-rah stuff at the train station in DC, and was like, they're selling their game down there again in Washington. I saw that this week. I saw it on my timeline. I saw people bubble up from the earth that wanted nothing to do with Dan Snyder. I look at this and I look at specifically at Chad Steele at the top of this, and I think about where David Modell and Roy Summerhoff and Baker in an offseason where off the field and accountability and then on the field and accountability that like we've gotten to a point where none of it matters. I know that. That's the lead story. The lead story is the owner doesn't speak this way. Why? Because he doesn't have to. Why are we not broadcasting at the Super Bowl next week? Because they don't care. They don't care about much. And Mark Andrews, hey, dude, it's okay. Well, you'll put an Insta out. You don't have to do that. Well, if he doesn't have to do that, then I don't have to do that. And if he doesn't have to do that, then why do we? And it becomes a slippery slope. And the first thing that Barry Bloom sent to me on the Mark Andrews thing was they're trying to throw everybody out. They're trying to throw everybody out of the locker rooms, period. So that's where it's going. I mean, like it's going to 18 games. It's going to all of that. But I just look at it on the offseason and think about what it used to look like sitting in my seat, broadcasting to the same people I'm broadcasting to right now, maybe their children, in some cases out on YouTube. Hi, kids. We know a little bit around here. And I the institutional memory of looking up and seeing Art Modell in the building, and I haven't been in the building in 3 years, but I think to myself, like, all of this stuff was below whatever the bar used to be, whatever, as Mike Tomlin would say, the standard is the standard. The standard used to be the owner was accountable, the coaches were accountable, it was a friendly, convivial, semi. Then the Ray Rice punch happened, their integrity went out the window, they lied about it, all of them, to get him on the field, including his wife, and put them all up to this. And for the last 10 years, nothing matters anymore. You don't even have to come out and talk to them. And they're going to run cover for you, and I'm going to be the bad guy. And I know this, and this is what I said to Leonard last week. That as a reporter, when I worked for the Baltimore Sun, I was like, you work for me, and like what all of that. You're charged as the reporter to go get the story. You're sent on the plane. If you go to my No One Listens documentary, John Stebbins said, put you on a plane, send you off somewhere to get the story. To get the story. The story last Sunday night was Mark Andrews, right? Like it was, if you're writing about it. And it's not that I need to see him crying with a towel. I don't need to see any of that. I just need to see if everybody else on the team is going to come out, and this is the way we're going to conduct ourselves, and we're going to talk about God and integrity and like of the people, and we're going to do all of that. Then we have to do it in our darkest moments, or we have to then apologize and say that wasn't good enough. And it was brought up to me about Ray Lewis in 07. I remember Kevin Byrne coming out in the locker. Remember where he was standing in the locker and saying, guys, Ray can't do this right now. Like, Ray's going to come out. I'm going to get him out, but it's probably not going to be in the next 20 minutes. Like, and when Ray came out Monday, Tuesday, whenever it was, first thing he said is, I want to apologize to all of you because I don't, I'm always, I'm here. I'm accountable. Right? That was 07. That's where we were then. Right? I don't, you know. And Billy Cundiff, when I wrote all of that Monday morning, and I wrote it Monday morning, I figured by the time I write it, they're going to be locker. He's going to be at the locker at 1 o'clock and just do whatever he needs to do for 4 minutes and say, like, I'm disappointed. We're all like every other athlete in the history of athletes has ever done. And I didn't even realize that I was the one who asked Billy Cundiff and Joe Flacco and probably Harbaugh too, because I was sitting in the front row. And that was at the point where I didn't mind asking a real question. It got to the point where I didn't ask enough questions, quite frankly, because it felt like they wanted to throw me out, and they did. They did. They did. You know, so for being the one to say to Billy Cundiff, Billy, what happened on the kick? Or for saying to Joe, my first thought is, Joe, you look like you thought he caught it. Did you? These are reporter questions, dude. This is what the F I do. You know what I mean? And so watching it all go down and thinking, if I were the guy that vested $1,000 and 72 hours of your life to go cover the game on an icy night, driving down an icy road and bald tires from the National Rent-A-Car in Buffalo and Orchard Park, like Jameson did and Jeff did, that a guy making $16 million a year drops the ball and needs to do better. And I'll still say that a week later. I'll say that after the Insta. I'll say all of that. I think the whole thing needs to be better in a general sense. But I started with the owner on this, and that's where I start, because they used to bring the owner out next week when you and I were in Minneapolis or New Orleans or Atlanta or Radio Row or wherever we were. We rarely were at that conference at the end because it was sort of timed that way to keep me out of it, I guess, because they wound up throwing me out so I can make that case. But they, I don't know, man. I'm trying to evaluate it and evaluate the real accountability. And this isn't me making stuff up. This is stuff you've been 15-year reporter. You remember when it used to be a different standard, to use their word.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to. I expressed my thoughts on the Mark Andrews thing at the time. My general rule of thumb is if your performance stands out, good or bad, to the degree that your teammates are going to be asked about it, you should talk. And I would say the same thing about anyone else on the team. If Mark Andrews was asked about someone else not playing well in a game and he had to answer for them, I'd say the same thing about that player. So that's, I'll leave it at that on that front. You spoke at length about it. You wrote at length about it. And look, people, you're probably not going to change too many people's minds on it on a level of, if you don't care that a player talks after a loss, then you're probably not, like it's just not, you're not going to change their mind
Well, I'm
on
a
it.
guy that thinks that they shouldn't be grabbing Andy Reid in the middle of football games. I mean,
Right,
I
sure.
think
And look, there's a
that.
lot of nuance to this. And I think part of this is where media is going, where it is right now, where it used to be. And, we've talked about this, and I don't just mean BaltimoreRavens.com here. I don't just mean Masson for the Orioles. I think you're seeing across sports leagues, across teams, across various entities that are owned by teams, that social media on the player front, that there's a perception. I'm not saying this is the right one, but I think the reality is there is a perception that the middleman's not needed, and we're the middleman in terms of representing fans and asking about player X or what's going on with this team or what's going on in the offseason or what happened in this game or what happened off the field with this scandal, as you mentioned, Ray Rice 10 years ago and all of that. And I think there's growing sentiments amongst players, amongst organizations that, hey, we've got our own website. We can control the message. We don't need to go to the media to put the story out.
And
If
there's
you're a
also
player,
growing revenue in doing that too.
and sure. And if you're a player, and look, there's even some validity to this. And this is where journalism and reporters have to take accountability as well, where players will say, why should I worry so much about answering questions if I know this reporter has misquoted me at some point in time or twisted my words in a way, which we know that happens. I'm not saying it always happens. I'm not saying when there's an accusation that it's always fair, but we also both know reporters have done
Well,
that
that's why
before.
Patrick Gleason's over your shoulder
Sure.
is so that, and look, all of this now, when they do it all on camera for everyone, saying you're twisting words, your words are your words. There's no more dark alleys of quotes behind sources said, like,
But that
all
still
of that
happens, though.
becomes.
That still happens. And I see that because I've seen it not in Baltimore specifically, not as much, but in the cutthroat of cutthroat cities and markets in terms of getting stories, that it still happens. It absolutely still happens. And I'm not saying that to absolve players from saying they don't have to talk either. Let's be clear. Again, this is all about everyone being accountable, reporters included. But I think there's a growing perception in 2025, and it's been trending this way in a long time, that teams have their own, quote, media. Players have their own microphone, which is their smartphone, or even, that they can literally broadcast Instagram Live as Marlon Humphrey does after every win. And you get behind the scenes access on the team plane after a win, where, players feel that they don't necessarily need to talk to the media because they can just talk directly to the fans. And, media, it's always been about being the representative of the fans, right? I don't need Mark Andrews to be accountable to me, Luke Jones, the reporter,
No question about it.
as much as it's speaking to the fan base, right? So there is nuance with this, and things have changed, and things aren't going to go back to the way they were in 1995. And I'm not suggesting that you were suggesting that. Let's be clear. But where does this all fit? Where is this all going? And yeah, it's hard not to look at this and say that accountability isn't lost along the way. What's going to, quote, fix that? To your point, very well, and we talked about this with the NFLPA this past fall with some of their tactics. They're trying to get media out of the locker room, and you know what? Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL are all watching very closely to see what happens there because the NFL, being the king of media in terms of its popularity, knows that if it happens there, they'll be able to get away with it as well.
So,
So
is there a career as a sports journalist? And that's what I asked Mark Hyman. We got into this to do this. If you're lucky enough to work for a guy like me who would send a guy like you to Buffalo to be a reporter so you could drive down snowy roads, park in the lot wherever they throw you, have a parka on to stand in a wintry hallway after doing this all year, all your life, to when the moment happens that you're there to witness. They just ghost you. That's
yeah.
weak. I mean, it's just weak. And it
Sure.
speaks of the arrogance and the disrespect that Chad Steele has shown toward me, but he's really shown it toward you. the audience. So it's fine. I sit here on the outside watching this. I would have dispatched you. We would have been on a plane this minute flying back from Kansas City. Maybe we thought going to the Super Bowl. When I booked the flights 3 weeks ago and they're on the four-game winning streak and they're beating everybody and Lamar's the MVP and Jalen Hurts is gimpy and like we bought in. I've been buying in since before Steve Bisciotti was trying to buy Maryland. You know what I mean? So I'm the guy that fought to get the team back here. But this is unacceptable. And I'm not gonna back down from that. I'm not. I mean, it's unacceptable that the owner does not take accountability, which tells the tight end he doesn't have to take accountability, which tells the coach that he can say whatever he wants, whether it's true or not. And the general manager sits there and laughs in Jerry Coleman's face, which I've done. But I mean, even if it's Jerry Coleman to snicker, I watched that thing on television now, boxed out, and DaCosta's, I mean, please go read my dear Eric DeCott. I mean, it's all there. But who these people are to me on the outside, and then I watch their tight end go out the back door, and I'm just thinking, what? Come on, man. David Modell, Art Modell, nobody I've ever known would be okay with that. John's okay with that because, you know, like, John doesn't like any of us anyway. Me sitting here, obviously, right? So I'm disappointed. I don't think I'm changing it, but it needs to be pointed out, and I'm the only one pointing it out. So therefore, it can't be valid, right?
No, I don't think you're the only one pointing it out because there are a lot of people who talked about Mark Andrews not talking. But I mean, look, with
They're
Mark
not
Andrews.
people that have been in that room that have been thrown out now who asked the first question to Billy Cundiff.
Sure.
That's me.
Sure. But my point is, no, every reporter who was in there noted that he was didn't talk to the media and noted the following day he didn't talk to the media. So, you know, they're anyway. Look,
Like Mark Andrews,
well, and this is what I want to bring
you
up.
know?
I do not. Consider, I mean, Mark Andrews won Media Good Guy 3 years ago. He pulling back the curtain a little bit. Now, you know, I don't like to do this too much. Is he going to be the most enlightening talker when he answers questions? He's very much a team guy. You know, he's you know, he has talking points that he generally will, but my point is,
I would call him guarded with the media. That's what I would
Yeah,
say.
I think that's a good way to put it. I think that's perfectly reasonable. But in fairness, and look, you can't force a player to be a good talker with the media or not, right? In the same way that anyone, you have an aptitude for it or you're not. You have an interest in doing it or you don't. But he's been someone who consistently has been there, including after games over the years. He's not someone who you don't see in the locker room for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, as players in the past have done in various generations and all that.
He hasn't been a guy with any
So
reputation of hiding his.
right, exactly. So I don't think this was a case of Mark Andrews saying, bleep those guys. I think Mark Andrews was truly that distraught and that disappointed and that devastated. That said, this is where we get into, and again, this isn't Ravens specific. I think this is generally speaking across sports. The role of what PR has become in 2025 in major professional sports compared to what it was 10 years ago, let alone certainly 30 or 40 years ago, where, you know, is the role to truly be a liaison or is the role to be path of least resistance for the players? And, you know, I'll leave that you or anyone listening right now to answer what they think, but, you know, do I think it was pushed in a very tough way for anyone to really push Mark Andrews to talk, or did they just kind of let him be? Right? Compared to how it might have been 10 years ago, or to your point using the Kevin Byrne with Ray Lewis 20 years ago, you know, almost 20 years ago examples. So, you know, I said my piece. I didn't lose sleep over Mark Andrews not talking. I'm not losing sleep over it. And I'm not saying you're not either. Let me be clear. I'm just saying
For
it's
me, it's an
there.
organizational issue that begins at
Sure.
ownership and really ends in empty seats and cheap seats and what
I mean, it
you're
can, sure.
asking of the fans and what your obligation used to be. And you've just decided, as the king, Steve Bisciotti, that you're just going to lower your own obligation. You're just going to move the bar down. And I'm not supposed to say that you're not trying hard when I'm watching the guy in Washington try hard, right? You know, just in a general sense, I don't know what the Orioles are going to do. I don't know. I mean, I know.
Although I will also point out, as a 76ers fan, Joshua Harris is not thought of very highly there right now. Let's
No
put it that
question
way.
about it.
Sure. So, you know, I'm just there. He's still within the honeymoon period, and all of them look way, 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 way better because they happen to be picking when Jaden
Look, I
Daniels is
remember
available
when
that year.
Ted Leonsis was up here, you know, trying to convince me I was Greek, and you know, everything was gonna he was gonna play hot. And then they didn't smell money up here. They brought their basketball team up here to Towson, they brought their hockey team up here, and they didn't smell people that were gonna spend $500 for preseason hockey games on crappy ice. And they and he promised me they were bringing the Stanley Cup. He just lies. He lied to DC. These are not people of integrity and high character. And I can, for Bisciotti, like when I wrote Purple Rain 2, I thought differently of him. I have a different opinion of him now, certainly a different opinion of all of them. And it's justified when a dude drops the ball who's supposed to be one of their good people, one of their captains, and doesn't come out, where 12 years ago, Billy Cundiff missed a kick and came out and didn't even say, "My idiot coach ate a timeout." Like, or maybe we could even taken a penalty and slow down the
He
operation, and
still
it would
should
have
have
been
made
better.
it, though. Still should have made it. I
But he
don't
didn't
want to.
hide from the media either.
No,
He
I
came
agree. No,
out
I'm
to
just saying,
answer
I
questions.
just didn't want to misrepresent that part of it because I think sometimes that gets a little overblown. Could they have managed the clock better and called a timeout there? Sure. He still was set up and missed a chip shot. I mean, it's that simple. Anyway, I hear what you're saying, and again, I think most fans, and I'm not trying to make too much of a generalization here, but
They don't care.
is the team good or not?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really, and this goes back to the issue that you and I have talked about for years, how I've talked about there are varying degrees of fandom, right? And you know, there are people who love the team but don't go to games and don't pump a lot of money into it other than their cable or satellite provider or whatever streaming service they need to watch the game. And you have some fans who were PSL owners before the team even arrived and invested years and years and years and still do today and consume everything. And, you know, you have a lot of people that are somewhere in between. And, you know, I'll be totally, and I believe me, I do not say this to excuse Mark Andrews. But if I'm being self-aware in terms of what I do, I don't, based on how the last week plus has gone, I don't think most fans care all that much that he didn't talk. I think, you know, the fact that he broke his silence and said what he said on Instagram, which,
Then we're all going away. You know what I mean? Like, literally,
but I'm just saying,
there's no reason for us to exist if there's no reason to ask them questions.
well, go away. Okay, maybe not that, but that's where things have to be reimagined. Right. I mean, and look, we all know this. If you're covering a team in the same way that you did in 1995, it's kind of on you, right? I mean, you've got to adapt, right? You know,
Oh,
just
I've
like,
adapted.
no,
You know, more
I
people
know,
read
I'm
my
not saying,
column on Mark
when I
Andrews
say you,
last
I
week
just
than
mean in general, right? I
you
mean,
know, so.
we know things have changed, right? I mean, we know, I mean, back in 2009, the question was, are you on Twitter? Right? In 2005, it was, are you blogging? In addition to, if you're a newspaper writer, writing what's in print, you know, what's going out in the newspaper every morning. So, you know, it's constantly evolving. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I have all the answers for that either, of what it's going to look like tomorrow, let alone 5 or 10 years from now or 20 years from now. But it's certainly evolving. And again, I think there is a growing sentiment among teams, and I don't say this meaning the Ravens and the Orioles specifically, but I certainly include them in the overall picture, that they can control their message and they don't need a middleman. And I'm not saying that's right. I don't think that's right, to be very clear, because when that happens, you tend to be less honest, right? When there
Less
isn't anyone
accountable.
holding you
Yeah.
accountable. So,
Right.
but I think looking at it pragmatically, looking at it realistically, taking the temperature of what it is, I think there's more of that. And chances are, Nestor, it's probably going to only get worse. It's probably not going to get better in that way. And as is always the case, and we talk about this, whether we're talking about Thursday night baseball or Thursday night football or Major League Baseball setting playoff times for ridiculous middle of the day, and you have 15 hours of notice for a wild card or a divisional series. The NBA, with load management and people that drop $4,000 hoping they're going to see LeBron James play for the first time, and he sits out that night. And I know LeBron, doesn't. I'm just saying, using him as an example. Everything you see, ultimately, it comes back to the fan as a consumer to say, what are you going to tolerate? Because if you continue to yak, eat it up and yak it up, Thursday Night Football is a perfect example of that. People complain and complain and complain, but you know what they do? They tune into Amazon every Thursday night and they watch it, right? Or at least enough people do that continues to make it profitable where the NFL says, well, we're going to continue to do this. So at some point in time, and again, I don't mean this as media as much as just speaking as a fan, as a consumer, again, it comes down to, are you going to tolerate it or not? And if you keep watching, you keep buying tickets, you keep buying merch and subscribing to the four different streaming services that you're going to need to watch every baseball game this year, and all the different things that as a sports fan you're being asked to do more and more of. If you continue to do it, then they're going to continue to push and push and push some more. And again, I'm
You're gonna
not
hate
saying
me when we
that's
get to the Orioles segment because we're not gonna talk about the team at all. We're gonna talk about $5 beers and $3 hot dogs, and we're gonna talk about, right?
good idea on that
The
stuff.
Birdland value.
Good
Well, I
idea on
mean,
that stuff.
going into it, this is an example. Katie Griggs comes in, and we're gonna talk at length about, Mark Fine and Don Kovac and their new team and like all of that. And these people are coming here, taking their lives, picking up their lives, coming here, trying hard. Trying really hard. And the football team, yeah, they're good on the field, except when they're having penalties and dropping the ball and losing games. And they have a lot of flash, but in the end, they haven't squeezed fruit in January when it matters, not to me, but to the people that really matter, like Stephen A. Smith. You know what I mean? Like the people that do this nationally that are starting to, put the choke label on the Ravens and on whether Harbaugh is going to win
I mean,
games
I
this
don't know
time
if
of
it's
year.
starting. I think that's, I mean, look, and just because you brought it up,
Hey, let's go on to the
lose,
field.
lo
That's your thing
losing,
anyway.
right? Losing to the Bills is not a choke job. Like, I there's a place and there's nuance with what's happened over the last 6, 7 years. In terms of what's happened in January. Look, John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson and the core veterans on this team, including Mark Andrews, they have to own that. Right. And we talked about it last week. I mean, kind of lost in, until it came to the forefront on last Sunday night was Mark Andrews hasn't been very good in the playoffs. If you go back to that Titans game, which that to me, the Titans lost 5 years ago, that is the true game where I really say unequivocally that they choked. Okay. They were absolutely better than that Titans team. Was it disappointing losing to the Chiefs last year? Absolutely. But they're the Chiefs. They've been in the Super Bowl 5 of the last 6 years now. I mean, they've won three. They're going for a three-peat, which would be unprecedented. So, in general, when you lose these games, you make the mistake the other team doesn't Right.
make.
But my
And we keep
but they're
beating
not.
ourselves becomes the, we keep beating ourselves. We keep
Sure.
beating. Well, yeah. And
But
that's a shame.
I also want to frame it properly in the sense that I look, some of these terms like choke jobs and stuff like that, I mean, we just, I think some of it's used way too liberally. Again, I would classify losing to the Titans at home as a 10-point favorite 5 years ago, and just, I mean, and really getting blown out. I mean, the final score wasn't as close, or was closer than that game actually was. That was, to me, that was a choke. 2018, I mean, Lamar had just turned 22, right? I mean, that offense had kind of been patched together with part Marty Morningwig, part Greg Roman. It was a great 7-game run. They weren't going anywhere that year. I mean, they weren't built to do what they were doing at that point to play into February. So, 20, they lost on the road to the Bills. It hurt at the time, but it's not like they were a 10-point favorite or anything like that. Last year, they lost to the Chiefs. It really hurt. Were they better than the Chiefs? Yeah. Were they so much better that I would say it was this over-the-top crazy choke job? Well, unless every team that loses to Kansas City chokes, the Chiefs have just been the best. And then, this year, I mean, okay, they turned it over three times. Mark Andrews, would I say he choked individually? Yeah, when you fumble on the penultimate drive of the game and then drop the 2-point conversion on the last drive of the game, it's tough for me not to say Mark Andrews didn't choke there. But look, I don't say this to forgive, like to be an apologist. Losing stinks. It stinks that they haven't broken through, and it is frustrating, and they haven't played their best football. But at the same time, there's also a realization that the other team does try as well. And, a few years back, you'd say it was Greg Roman and the offense and Lamar not being, quite as advanced as a passer, for the first couple years, when they get in those situations. That's not the case anymore, and we've seen a better version of Lamar Jackson in the playoffs the last year or two compared to his first three seasons. I think that would be fair to point that out. But the collective, it hasn't been good enough. And it is a case of what does need to happen. And, I've seen a lot of people just try to throw every playoff loss in John Harbaugh's face going all the way back to 2008. And just kind of feel like you could do that with anyone, couldn't you? You could put together, I mean, look at Andy Reid in Philadelphia. Look at how much failure, quote, failure they had in January in Philadelphia all those years. So was he an idiot then? And then he just kind of lucked into what they've become now? No. I mean, it's part of it is, you've got to have the right mix, and you've got a quarterback who is this generation's Tom Brady and Joe Montana. And right now, the Ravens and Josh Allen are. And the Bills are kind of, they're the Dolphins in the 80s and in early 90s, and they're the Colts until they broke through, with Manning, after what, 8 years of not doing it. So, and I don't say that
There
again.
is a point, though, where you think like Burrow, Lamar, and Josh Allen, if they all get to one Super Bowl, how many is Mahomes going to get to? And Kelce's going to be on the other end of this. And I don't know how long Andy Reid's going to hang around, although
And
his
Kelce,
fumblerooski and all that, like I maybe he'll hang another 4 or 5 years. I don't know. Maybe he will. But there's a point where you think like, all three of them aren't going to beat Mahomes out every. Like, I just think the next 5 or 6 years, as I go back through the Roethlisbergers and the Mannings and the Flaccos and the people that did manage to break through one, and on the other end, the Rodgers and the Brees, and for that class of player on that other side, none of, I didn't mention Brady. It was Brady, and all the rest of them were fighting for scraps. Jalen Hurts is fighting for a scrap in New Orleans as an underdog 2 weeks from now.
I mean, and again, you just kind of said it. Ben Roethlisberger, two Super Bowls, right? Peyton Manning, two. And the second one really wasn't Peyton Manning. It was the Denver defense, right? I mean, Peyton, go back and look at his numbers in that 2015 postseason. Ironically enough, in 06 even, was not Peyton Manning that was leading the charge there. I mean, that Colts defense and Bob Sanders, like they had that going, their running game. I mean, Peyton Manning ironically didn't play all that well in the postseason run for his two Super Bowls. But anyway, Peyton Manning, one of the all-time greats, two Super Bowls. I mentioned Roethlisberger, two. Joe Flacco, one. But you start in 01 Patriots, 02 the Raiders. Rich Gannon was an MVP in the league, right? That they got there, they got their butts kicked, and then you never heard from them again. And 25 years later, they still stink.
Every time I see Matt Ryan, every time I see Philip Rivers, I think they were great quarterbacks. They
Yeah.
just
I mean, Philip Rivers is an example of someone who never even got to a Super Bowl. If Peyton or if Tom Brady never existed, would he have maybe broken through at some point? Maybe. But 03, Patriots. 04, Patriots. 05, Steelers. Okay. 06, Colts, finally. 07, Patriots. 08, Steelers. 09, Colts get there and lose to the Drew Brees. You again, I don't need to do this for another 11 years after that, but we know it was mainly Patriots, and you were lucky if you got broke through once or twice. And I mean, that's kind of where the Ravens, that's kind of where the Bills are right now. The Bengals got broke through once and didn't win, and since then they've dealt with injuries and haven't gotten back. haven't even made the playoffs the last 2 years. And let me be clear, I don't say this to just give the Ravens a total pass, right? If you want to sit here and say that John, if you don't believe John Harbaugh, the Ravens can break through with John Harbaugh, okay, who are you going to hire? Because the rest of the league thinks you sound nuts saying that, right? The rest of the other every other market looks at that and says, you want to fire John Harbaugh? What the heck are you talking about? And people will say, well, what about Mike Tomlin? The Ravens standard, compared to what the Steelers have become over the last 5, 6 years, it's not a comparison. It's just not. I mean, and the Steelers, anyone would say, well, they don't have Lamar Jackson. Exactly. So, I mean, and the Steelers have made the playoffs and been like, they've made
Jerked
the playoffs, but
around,
that's been their
right?
ceiling.
But
That's been their
they've
ceiling.
been a bad good team or a good
I mean,
bad
the
team.
Ravens, and look, let me be clear. I'm not saying that the
The
Ravens have
Ravens
been
have
a
been
great team.
a great team that has not been good enough.
Right. They've won a few playoff games, not enough. Fully acknowledging that. I'm not spelling this out just to say that everything's fine, but at the same time, I think you also need to, you need to be able to see the forest for the trees and understanding there's still a heck of a lot going for them. And that's why I said it's kind of the blessing and the curse. It's not, if it's truly as simple as firing John Harbaugh and you think he's the problem, who are you hiring? What, you gonna trade for Andy Reid? I'll hear that. Yeah, if the Chiefs want to give you Andy Reid, I'll tell John I love you, but hey, Andy's a little bit better, right? He's won more Super Bowls, whatever. Who else would you say? Maybe Sean McVay? Maybe? And look, there's some other coaches that I'd put on the same tier as Harbaugh, right? Like, I'm not saying he's unequivocally second best or unequivocally third best. I mean, if you want to throw O'Connell for the Vikings, you see what he's kind of done and with lesser quarterbacks and still been able to make it work. And there are other good coaches, but my point is when I see people just like bang the table about how bad Harbaugh is, I'm just at some point in time, I would say this, and I'll leave you with this because I know we've rambled on a long time, but for John Harbaugh's harshest critics, and there are even people that I know that are friends of mine, people I respect their opinion, as even if they're quote just a fan, I think they're very knowledgeable and they bang away on how bad John Harbaugh is. And I would say if he was truly that bad, this would be leaking into the regular season and it'd be leaking oil way more. You'd be seeing them having an 8-9 season and or just just not, you'd see more problems. You'd hear more about locker room issues or things like, and you just don't hear those things. And they've been excellent in the regular season. Okay, I get it. They went 8-9 in 21. Half their roster got hurt, including their quarterback in early December. So what do you want? What do you expect there? Tyler Huntley was, their secondary was made up of guys on the practice squad that I had a tough time keeping track of, let alone Joe average fans. So, I just think if he was really as bad as his harshest critics want to make him out to be, this would really start to, these things would show up in the regular season to a way greater degree than talking about, all right, I get it. Vegas loss is bad in week two. You lost to the Browns in week eight. I get it. And look, those two games were the difference between playing in Buffalo compared to Baltimore, which, might have been the difference. Who knows? So I'll hear that. There's criticism that's warranted, but I still look at this thing in its totality and say, and if this makes me a Pollyanna about it, then fine. I still think I'm much more in the camp of just got to try again next year. I mean, it really is that simple. And you hope that another year of experience, a year older. We've seen Lamar look better the last couple of years compared to how he looked in the 19 and 20 playoffs. And all these guys are a year older. You're going to add some couple guys through the draft, and just like you do, and you see what happens. So I know that's not a good enough, that's a tepid answer for what they need to do, but I really do think that that's the best path here rather than firing your coach or blowing up certain elements of your roster and then just going into a complete unknown where, you've been right there. You just got to figure out a make one more play. Wait to make two more plays against Kansas City last January and might have been a different story. Don't fumble the ball going across the goal line. Don't drop it in the end zone, right? I mean, these are not things that you need to have Vince Lombardi reincarnate to preach to your guys. they need to know. So I if that's too wishy-washy for people, then I'm wishy-washy. But I really think it is as simple as you run it back and you got to try again next year and hope that you're a year older and that'll make the difference. And maybe Patrick Mahomes or will be, they'll be on a bad day finally, because they're not going to win. They're not going to win every year moving forward, I think, although we're at 5 of 6 now, so
I
who
think they're going to
knows?
win next week. I'll leave it at that. So, yeah.
Yeah, probably. Although that's a good Philadelphia roster. We'll see. I mean, the
We'll have
fact that
plenty
they
of time to
played,
talk about
yeah,
that.
we'll get to that.
I'm going to get you out for a cup of Super Bowl next week. I've got to
Yeah.
find whatever place you want to come. Maybe get you at the Coopers on Friday to wrap the thing up for the week. Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs. If you're on our WNST tech service, now 6,000 of you on it, all brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. You'll get any breaking news that the Orioles, they sign any more 41-year-old pitchers. Maybe we'll throw that out to you. Getting ready for spring training, and I'm getting ready for that big Steve Bisciotti press con that's not coming. I'm going to write him a letter. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. I'm a man of letters. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.